Hello, hello. This is Kinnack, also known as Landon Winkler, coming back to you for the 41st Metroplexity podcast. It is August of 2015, closing in on Metroplex Day. I just got back from Gen Con a little bit ago, and I'm ready to turn around and head out for a bit of a vacation is definitely the wrong word, but sort of a sitting in a cabin and working trip with my spouse, who is going to be doing a ton of editing, and I'll hopefully be doing a ton of coding to go along with it. So I might be out of touch for a little bit, but after that, I should have something interesting to show for it, hopefully. Anyway, let's move on to the questions. Hey, Kinnack! I'm sorry, this is from CryptoDynamic. Well, let's get a couple questions out of the way, then. How was Gen Con? Gen Con was awesome. Pretty much always is. Some things were better than normal, and some of them sort of, a little more annoying. But we had the... I run two Pathfinder campaigns, a Tuesday night game and a Thursday night game. And our entire Tuesday night group went plus one of the players from Thursday night, better known as Puyo. So it was me, Liz, Puyo, and then the rest of the Tuesday night group that Liz is in. We went out. We had a lot of fun. We actually got to stay downtown this time. If you have not been to Gen Con in, the last 2 years or so, housing has gotten sort of not quite post-apocalyptic. It used to be back in the day in Milwaukee, people would be crashing out in skywalks and stuff like that. But definitely, it's not easy cramming everybody into Indianapolis. It was over, 61,000 people this year, which, for comparison's sake, it was something like 55,000 last year, something like that, and that was already the biggest ever, by, a substantial chunk. It's... people loving them some games, so that was cool. Got to see a lot of Pathfinder stuff, chat with the developers and so forth. Did your True Dungeon, which we always do. Unfortunately, this year was a little lackluster. Not 100% if we're going to be doing it again next year. We'll see how that goes. And went to a really good couple of seminars, which segues delightfully into the next question. What are those new tools you gain towards getting Old Town out? The specific reason I actually want to talk about this is because it'll make the Old Town release look a little bit different than the release for the other main quests, or quests in general. In that, I realized actually during a self-editing seminar, of all things, which was also helpful from an editing sort of perspective, but about the fact that, Novos got out and is, 90% done, and so many other things don't get out, and it's really because I'm not breaking things up. So what I would expect to see from Old Town is a sequential release. I have, frankly, most of it done, but need to just sort of... I'm just going to go through and fill in the gaps in each chunk, launch it, so, you get the, intro, you should go to Old Town, and, the map and, the background stores and stuff, and then those areas unlocking one at a time. Until it's completely done, we'll probably still have the Survivors contest running. Once it's completed, obviously, that will pay out, as it were, and then show up to the Old Town contest, and probably a whole lot of new prizes, which is going to be... quite a bit of stuff. that in and of itself is going to be quite a lot of work. So, part of the reason to sort of break things up is, aside from the fact that I'm just really bad at doing a giant, it seems like every step I take on a giant project, like, less and less seems to get done. So it just sort of approaches it asymptotically. So I just need a smaller chunks. So hopefully that'll work. If that doesn't work, we'll try something else. But that is the plan going forward. So I'd expect to see the first teasers of Old Town quite soon. Have you had any ideas of additional content to put in the engineering lab? Not particularly. I mean, it's sort of, I feel like it does what it's supposed to do. I could, like, have you run into some random people in there or something, but it's really just there to provide the item payout for those Novos encounters. If we knew how to do it, would switching between learning Sock Through Snow and Fire Run from the incredibly abused pants be straightforward to do? I feel like that's a yes. I will have to look that up, though. Yeah, that wouldn't be a problem. When thinking harder at the classic writing desks, are my well running dry and the story being all wrong problems that need to be solved separately? The messages are definitely, they have distinct meanings. Will we be seeing Janet again anytime soon? It would not entirely surprise me if you saw Janet this Halloween. I'm hoping to do something a little bit different this Halloween. Probably not a giant thing, because also trying to get Old Town out at sort of the same-ish time. But, yeah, hopefully you'll be able to see at least a couple familiar faces. Some questions from Al. Hi, Kenneth. Thanks for the podcast. You're quite welcome. Looks like Cryptodynamic already asked about Gen Con, so I will ask. If you didn't answer above, how is Old Town coming along? Close enough to being done that I feel like I could get it all done and push it all out, but I don't think that's ever actually going to happen, which is why I'm planning on putting it out chunk by chunk. This might be more clear once we see Old Town, but how long will be reunited with the other three survivors? How long will it be? This might be more clear once we see Old Town, but how long will we be, reunited with the other three survivors? There's a word missing there. The choice for survivor is intended to carry through basically the rest of the game. Any last-minute things you recommend doing before Old Town comes out? Will you give us a countdown to the release? The way that I plan on launching it, it should sort of serve as its own countdown, so it won't be like a sudden catastrophic drop of everything ever. The first push will probably just include the beginning text from the whichever survivor you chose sending you to Old Town, and like the map, right? And then the actual encounter area is probably still being locked, and then those getting sort of polished and activated one at a time until we're done. So that'll hopefully give you a while to sort of work on things. What inspired the change to XP distribution in combat? there were... It just seemed a little out of place, actually. I hadn't really thought about it for literally years. But I was considering sort of how that plays out in relation to, you know, player choice really affecting how your character grows. And really the most obvious way that should happen is your stats reflecting what type of techniques you use. And that's not really what was going on before. I mean, there was some weighting that happened there, but it was fairly minimal. So I really wanted that to be a stronger sort of push. So you could, you know, go through the game and use all of your, you know, strength techniques and be really strong and really bad at everything else, depending obviously on non-combat choices you make as well. But I think that directly tying that works really well. Does the paper boat do anything? I have a note somewhere to allow to give the paper boat some use text so you can, like, float it on puddles and stuff. But that's, at the moment, it wouldn't entirely surprise me if I'd buried some use for it somewhere, but if I did, it was a long, long time ago. Antique Lord Mirror questions. Is it significant that the mirror goes summer, winter, spring, fall in that order as you progress through and run? Why not in season order? Because the seasons are associated with the survivors, and that's sort of the order that the survivors end up going. Is there anything from the mirror that we will have to specifically be in run to find? I mean, there's some stuff that's more, I guess, interesting in run, but you definitely, but the big stuff that's still missing, can be done. Some of it could be done in run, some of it has to be done out of run. Or cross runs. In each zone, there seems to be an irreversible action you can do, such as burning down the hut in winter. Is there anything special to find before locking ourselves out in that way? Nothing that I feel like you would really kick yourself over. Like, no, like exclusive items or, you know, techniques or anything like that. This was asked way back in podcast around 8. But I guess it might be time to ask again. Is there a way to advance seasons post-run? Seems like you could pile up snow in winter, maybe you could ramp in spring, but can't get there. Once you have selected your survivor, the season is locked until the end of the run. Until you start a new run. So, No, there isn't any way to actually change this. A while ago, I asked if there was a Cyberbowl player avatar. I think you said no at the time, but consider adding at some point. Any Cyberbowl avatar available now? Still no. Actually, I have the art for it. I'm just a terrible human being. Any new non-unearthly avatars in general? Let me check the list. I feel like we're up to something like 37 avatars in total. No, it's been a while since I've added a non losing words here, an earthly avatar. Why does Zach love unearthly coins? What does he do with the coins? Does he have any other sources of income? Well, he certainly has plenty of contacts who are more than happy to give him stuff, so that's probably coming from some large reserve of credits or blackmail material or something. He's not somebody who is living in Southside because he doesn't have the means to live anywhere else. But he does just seem to collect them. Reports on, you know, whether he goes into his house at night and rolls around on bed of unearthly coins like a dragon? Not sure. Although I'm feeling he's more of the Scrooge McDuck, you know, diving into a swimming pool full of unearthly coins type. The Hungry Ooze and Ecofuel Flamethrower give different messages based on the gang stash value of fed items. Are these messages significant themselves, or just a hint that the gang stash value matters? One of them, there is a specific breakpoint that you need to know about that is indicated by that message. The other one is just a hint. Like, they're both hints. One of them, is a hint with a, you know, special message buried in there that, does some, you know, cool stuff. Mitigar players back in season, there are apparently still some songs we haven't found. It's been out for over 5 years now. Did you expect things to stay hidden that long? The Midgar player was definitely among the more, puzzly items, in that it's very, like, it was designed sort of from the puzzle out, which most of the items are sort of like, oh, you know, we could use a flamethrower, but the, that one was definitely, like, the puzzle existed and sort of, like, germinated into an item. Is it just a matter of finding the right data to feed it, or do we need to do some lateral thinking? There are a lot of songs there, there's some of both. I think you have probably all of the parts you need as far as just data, and then the rest of it is sort of playing around combinations of things in the actual core puzzle itself. It seems that the open parasol technique was made back in October 2011 when the abandoned subway was revamped, but we couldn't actually learn the technique until October 2012 when the art museum went in. Are there many other seemingly NPC-only techniques that we can actually learn? There aren't a lot of them. I think there's one that comes to mind immediately. Most NPCs, I mean, if you just watch, like, there's sort of a divide between, like, humanoid NPCs and then, like, etheric monstrosities. And the humanoid types tend very strongly towards using techniques that, you know, you can also get. And for the most part, there's just a large amount of that overlap. And separately, like, there's sort of monstrous techniques you don't tend to get. But if you were looking for, you know, trying to learn a technique like that, I would look for the ones that humanoid enemies use. Still trying to find more ways to scare Saber. He did not seem intimidated by the Valentine Killer and Vigilante outfits. Did I mess up? Any other hints on what might scare him? There are sort of, I'm just digging into the file. Yeah, I'm actually just not finding the... I'll have to dig into that more closely later. There are a bunch of different ways to scare them. They interact a little bit, like... A lot of times you'll need, like, a little bit from column A, a little bit from column B. So definitely, as you do stuff, watch the messages closely, because sometimes he may just, you know, he may be a little intimidated, but not enough, and you should get some feedback from that. Some questions from XGIF. Flormir, why is low summer, David winter, Dr. Amundsen spring, and hell fall? A lot of it is, there's sort of a general, what people's, sort of attributes are. Like, thematically it might make more sense, for example, for, like, hell to be winter. But... cold is very strongly related to etheric stuff, which is very strongly related to David. Like, that all sorts of ties together there. And fall is more about, sort of like, just doing what it takes to survive, I guess, which could also very easily fall into winter, obviously, but, David kind of got that, so hell gets small. So on like that. It goes back a lot into just the, if you look at, like, the coins, for different, seasonal contests, that same sort of relationship holds. Are the Forge or Gauntlet Sealed made the same template as Forge Sword? Best as I can tell, they act like any power tool, and you have no hardening left. Effect works in the round when it was gained. Gain 2 extra power with the hardening when the effect is already in effect. I.e. perfect and execution has 5. 2 base, 1 from being the leading tool and having the effect, and 2 from having hardening to burn. They are very similar. Like, they're sort of, different aspects of the same thing. So, you should expect them to work roughly the same way. Abstract Donovan asks, the harder to get techniques, is it just a question of combining types of lessons and how much I change the mask with text of the appropriate stat type? Something more? Clue? Let's see. Hmm. mean, the, they're sort of broken up into, different categories, depending on, you know, which buffs and what sort of, you know, choices you're making. But yeah, it does tie in quite a bit to the types of techniques you're using. But yeah, there's some of them branch out a little bit more than others. I mean, some of them you have to sort of make those choices more actively, I guess. A few of them will more or less fall into your lap, but other ones you have to kind of have to plan it a little bit more in advance, just what you're doing to get that, if that helps at all. What are the design decisions behind some group of items being mutually exclusive and others toggling like genuine feathers? It's not something that I do really consistently. I take this answer with a grain of salt. But what I would typically decide on is if you're supposed to be kind of adapting to what you get out of, you know, a chunk of items, they'll probably be mutually exclusive. So, like, if you have, I guess just to keep things simple, we'll talk about, like, the items from the Urban Legends book. If I were setting that up so that when you summon them, that kind of gives you a hint for what type of, like, techniques you should use for the day, or, you know, basically which buffs you end up using, and then, like, changing your behavior to match those buffs, then you'd want them to be exclusive. If it were something more like, especially if it's like a minor buff, if it's something where I don't expect people to change their behavior to match it, then it would just be, you know, toggling so that it adds on top of the previous ones. And there are also some that it's just not. I guess when you have a group where some items are way easier to get than others, it makes a lot more sense for them to be mutually exclusive. Like, let's say, for instance, that there's a really, like, you know, an ultra rare fishing line out there somewhere that does something ridiculous. If that was out there, then you could just use, like, you know, if they toggle back and forth rather than being exclusive, you could use, like, you know, 100 of the easiest to get fishing line, and then toss one of the, you know, really good one on top and switch it all over. And that's kind of boring. In that case, I would definitely go for mutually exclusive. But when we're talking about just a small group of items, like you'd usually almost always would end up getting out of an unearthly item, having them toggle is a lot more reasonable. But I would, typically with non-unearthly content, I have it be mutually exclusive just so that I don't run into problems with it in the future. Like music. You know, there's some ways to get music that are really, really, really easy. Some types of music are very difficult to get. And so having a having them toggle like that outside of, you know, very specific circumstances would be potentially a problem. And I'd rather just sort of get on the right foot with things like music, fishing lines, fishing hooks, stuff like that. All right, and it looks like we've hit our questions. This is a pretty short one, but I'm excited to hopefully be moving in on Old Town. As I mentioned briefly before, I'm going on sort of a retreat. Makes it sound way more pompous than it is, but going out into a cabin and hopefully getting my I's dotted and T's crossed. I will intermittently have internet access while we're out there, so hopefully I won't get behind on bug reports or anything. But when I get back from that, I hope to have the first Old Town stuff out pretty quickly after that. And then we'll collectively figure out how the other Old Town stuff comes in. There's still... there are a lot of man hours in Old Town, and there will still have to be many more before we're actually, you know, have it fully done. So it's not going to be like, you know, next week I put out the first thing of Old Town, and then, like, you know, the week after that or 2 weeks after that it's done. Probably. I mean, there's an off chance that I will suddenly, you know, be struck by a bolt of, you know, lightning that's infused with etheric power or something, but I would... It'll probably still be a bit, but hopefully it'll be... I mean, it'll work a lot better for me, pretty sure, to put it out in chunks, and hopefully it'll also be a little bit more entertaining to at least have, you know, chunks to sort of look through and familiarize yourselves with as we go. So yeah, that's where we're at right now. So thanks very much for listening. Thanks for playing and for donating. I'm glad the people are enjoying the EcoFuel flamethrower so much. It combines two of my greatest loves, composting and fire. So glad that people are enjoying that. And hopefully we'll be seeing some Old Town stuff pretty soon. And see you again with podcast 42. So long, and thanks for all the fish.